Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everyone, and happy Martin Luther King Day for those of you in the United States who might be celebrating today. Thanks so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Before we dive into today's show and I introduce you to our guest, I'd love to take a moment to thank our sponsors who make today's show possible, Markham Search. Markham Search LLC offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, including temporary services, payrolling services, as well as executive search and contingency staffing. So please do keep them in mind for all of your potential recruitment needs. Today we have with us on the show Julian Brass. Julian is the founder and former CEO of award-winning Canadian media company, Notable.ca, otherwise known as Notable Life, a front-running online brand dedicated to inspiring driven millennials to live a notable life. On an ever-expanding journey of exploring natural lifestyles such as holistic health and wellness, spirituality, yoga, and positive psychology, Julian has trained and collaborated with yogis from India, rabbis, and priests in Jerusalem, as well as top medical doctors in NYC and some of the most successful entrepreneurs in the world. As an international keynote speaker, workshop facilitator, coach, teacher, and healer, Julian aims to leave every person he connects with ready to own not just anxiety, but to truly own their lives. Thanks so much for joining us today, Julian.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure. So today's topic, you know, is such a fun topic. I love this concept of how do we embrace our anxiety as a secret edge to success. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background, how you came to create the first company and sell it and now write this new book?
Sure. So 2008 came around. I was living in Cali for about 2 years in Silicon Valley, working in the internet world. And I was 24 years old and I moved back to Canada, ready to start up my own thing, back to Toronto where I'm from. And very quickly, I suffered from pretty bad anxiety, crippling at times, to be honest. It was really bad. And the thing is that, you know, I didn't have the tools and the holistic health understanding that I do today. And you know, this idea of living super healthy back in 2008 was so much less mainstream than it is today. So me being this young startup entrepreneur, I thought, you know, if I want to be taken seriously, I can't tell anybody how I'm actually feeling. Fear of the unknown was getting me in a big way. I didn't know how I was going to make my rent. I didn't know how I was going to pay my bills. I didn't even know how I was going to, you know, pay for decent food. It was a really scary time. And the thing is, I've always been a go-getter. I've always been extremely driven since I was a child. And, you know, I've had a million little businesses along the way. I've actually had a learning disability most of my life, but I never let that stop me. And I was always willing to go the extra mile to achieve what it is that I wanted to achieve. So when I got anxiety out of nowhere back in 2008, just like every other challenge I've had in my life, I said, okay, here's another thing that I have to figure out. I've got to figure out how to use this to my advantage and how to thrive with it. And that was sort of the beginning of what 11 years later transpired to become a book called Own Your Anxiety and, you know, a movement that's happening around the world that is all about helping people learn how to harness their anxiety so that they can make it their secret edge.
So as somebody who experiences anxiety myself, Julian, I'm going to pretend to get into the minds of our listeners who might be tuning in and saying, okay, yes, a lot of us had anxiety in 2008. It was obviously a time where there was a lot of influx and ups and downs going on around the globe. How do we even begin to wrap our heads around anxiety? I personally have struggled with it. And it sounds great in theory. People will give you great breathing techniques. You know, Deepak Chopra might recommend using vagal breathing, or this, you know, guru or that thought leader might say this or that. But it seems to me, as somebody who's faced this most of my adult life as well, it seems insurmountable. In that moment when you're faced with anxiety, whether it's about paying your bills, whether your company will succeed, whatever that might look like, how do you begin to wrap your head around that and move through it rather than run from it?
Well, I'd say there's two main things that we need to look at, and they're related but so different. So one is understanding that anxiety is coming from some sort of fear surrounding the unknown. The other is understanding that the physiology in our body can be leading to anxiety. And I think that we need to look at these things completely differently. So one is, just let's go with what you brought up a moment ago, breathing techniques. 100%, it's complete science and true that if somebody who's feeling anxious does change how they're breathing, they will be able to go into that, let's call it anxiety fire, and not get burned quite as harshly as they would if they're not taking care of things like their breath on a physiological level. And the same when it comes to physiology, the same goes for what are you putting in your body? You know, what substances are you putting in or not putting in that your body's either saying I don't want or I do want, right? We need to look at our vitamin intake, nutrients, diet, if there's drug use, what alcohol consumption is like. We need to look at caffeine consumption, sleep patterns, and all that stuff. It's very, very physiological. And then on the other hand, going back to this concept of the unknown, the question is, how can people who feel anxiety shine more light on that unknown? Because the more we start to understand what the unknown may actually be, all of a sudden it's not so unknown and it becomes more known. And from a place of knowing, we're able to really start to perhaps gain clarity, gain some confidence, find inner center and calm. Right. In fact, there's some interesting data out there that says that people who have anxiety are prone to make much poorer decisions when they're feeling anxious. So That is such a motivator that for people like you and I who feel anxiety at times or a lot of the time, we need to figure out, okay, so if I am prone to make poorer decisions from an anxious state, what can I do to all of a sudden change that state more frequently? And let's say, you know, at a very practical level, maybe not make decisions when we're feeling anxious.
Well, that sounds very good in theory. It sounds brilliant, Julian, and I would love to learn from you, and I'm sure our listeners would as well. What do you do? Because sometimes it does feel like, let's say that you're in a business meeting and your boss is yelling at you because there's a report that was due on Friday by 5 p.m., and it's now Monday. It may be a holiday if you're in the United States, and that report is not done. And there is a real amount of anxiety. You know what? You might lose your job if that report isn't done, or there could be other financial or other types of repercussions. How do you not make a choice or try to get that report out when you're under that level of pressure because there's a time constraint around it?
That's when it comes to a place where, you know, personally, I get really excited about this, and this is a lot of my work. We need to look at those anxious feelings that we have, and we need to get athlete level about them. We need to get top performer level about them. If you picture famous athletes and musicians and performers, when they go to perform, whether it's on the court or the field or the stage, they're feeling, for the most part, anxiety beforehand. There's a lot of very successful people who are feeling that anxiety before it's time for them to go and do their thing. But instead of letting the anxiety feel like 10,000 pounds on their shoulders or like screaming chihuahuas in their chest that hold them back and make it so they can't go and actually perform at an A-class level, they find a way to take that energy and literally harness it so that it can become their secret edge. And I really believe that with the right amount of training and dedication to learning the different tools, anybody can do it. I was able to do this in my own life when I first got really bad anxiety back in 08. And then as I went ahead and started to build my former business, I would look at myself and my anxiety and I would say, okay, you know what? Like, hey, if someone like LeBron James can go and do their thing on the court, why can't I? or if Adele, a famous performer who's got very bad anxiety and has actually vomited on her fans twice while performing in her career.
I had no idea.
Yeah, no kidding. If someone like that, who's, you know, performed so many times, had two accidents, well, I'm a numbers guy and a stats guy. So I'm like, that means that only two out of, what, 10,000 times did she, quote unquote, let the anxiety get the best of her? That gives me a lot of hope. That tells me that she's a human like I am. And if someone like Adele can get her anxiety under wraps and still go and just absolutely light up the stage 99.99% of the time, then why can't Julian? Why can't I figure out how that works? And that's what set me on my quest. And that's why I went all over the world to learn with different people and also so deep within my own self to figure out my own triggers, to then be able to essentially level the playing field of this access to the information, right? Because having started my business with nothing and literally saw my bank account in red two times, not once, but twice. Like, I did not know how I was going to make rent. And then luckily having business success, once the success came, I was able to afford the time and the money to go and figure out and learn from the best. And having once not been someone who had so many resources, I still have a very, very, very soft spot for just the reality of the world that not everybody has tons of time and money. It doesn't feel like that far away that I was one of those people. So when I started to really get my anxiety under wraps and my business became a big success, I was like, wait a second, this is fundamentally unfair. The world needs more access to this knowledge. You should not need to be rich or, you know, have a ton of time because you're self-employed to be able to go and learn this stuff. And that's why I wrote Own Your Anxiety, my book, in a way where it takes knowledge from the Western world. It takes tons of philosophy and deep, deep, deep inner spiritual learnings from the Eastern world and breaks it down into 99 super brief tools that are only 1 to 3 pages each, and anybody can jump into and start implementing. So coming back to your question, Jennifer, sometimes this stuff does sound like, oh, it's almost too good to be true. But the thing is that the data is there. And my book has almost 100 medical references. The data is there. The question really is to all of your listeners and to you and to me when I'm not feeling like my better self, are we willing to put the data into use and into practice to own our anxiety and own our entire lives? And only we know the answer to those questions. But the thing is that it's not a button you push. It takes work. It takes that inner journey, and it takes resilience and dedication. But I will leave everyone with the message that if Adele can do it, or your favorite sports player can do it, and if some random Canadian dude named Julian can do it, so can you.
I love that. Well, let's talk about that, Julian. You mentioned these 99 tools. Let's play around with what are two of these tools and talk about, like, for me, for example, I would love to, I'm sure all of us at some point or another have experienced insomnia. And I know that if I have a really important meeting the next day, or if you have a flight to catch, so often we don't sleep well or we can't fall asleep and we have this crippling anxiety that then leads to insomnia, which then leads to our brains racing. Is there a tool for somebody out there who might have an important meeting tomorrow that they could just go, boom, go out there and begin to apply that technique and see it actually work for them in their lives?
Absolutely. So I would encourage anyone listening to treat sleep like it's part of their job. It's not a bonus. It's not a reward for doing good, you know, at your 9 to 5 or your 9 to 6 or your 9 to 9 or whatever hours you may be working. I've done it all. I've done a 9 a.m. to 12 midnight shift too many times to count. So, but sleep, you see, that was before I understood the importance of sleep. Sleep is not a bonus, everybody. Sleep is your job. Okay, so knowing that sleep is part of your job and is truly as important as getting that project done for your boss or that new proposal for your client, I'm not saying it's more important than that stuff. I'm saying it's part of your job, just like that stuff is. So how do you treat the sleep like it's a priority? And I would say from personal experience, I had to start to modify some of the things that were more negotiable in my life. So for instance, if crushing it professionally isn't negotiable, and if sleep isn't negotiable, then what is negotiable? Well, maybe going out with my friends could be, right? Maybe, you know, that third or fourth extracurricular thing that I do every week could be. Maybe, you know, it's going in for the 75-minute dinner instead of the 30-minute dinner. Whatever the case may be, I've started to look at what are the must-haves and what are the nice-to-haves in life. And when it comes to our health, I look at it like these are must-haves. These are not nice-to-haves. The problem with society is that we wear overworking like it's a badge of honor. And I
in Western culture, let's pause and differentiate in Western culture, because there are other cultures that definitely have other values.
You're absolutely right. And I'm definitely speaking to the Western audience here.
Perfect.
Yeah,
okay.
It's this Western audience in this Western world that we're in that, you know, we wear being super busy as a badge of honor. And, you know, I'll never forget about 2-3 years into starting my old business, I was getting sick all the time. Like, I'm talking every couple months, I was like out for like 2 to 3 weeks with some sort of brutal flu. And this was like a solid year or two. I was so unbelievably productive when I wasn't sick. But when I was sick, I was like useless. I could hardly do anything. And it's because I really was living life like I was on a sprint, right? It wasn't a marathon to me. It was a sprint. I was sprinting all the time, giving up on eating good food, getting lots of sleep, having a wellness regimen, essentially. I didn't think that was a priority. I was much younger. I didn't know what I know now. But the thing is, you see, one day after like this cycle of just getting sick again and again and again, I finally just sort of had this awakening. And I was like, if I can hit these professional goals that I am, you know, dreaming of hitting, but I'm sick by the time I arrive, is it really worth it?
No.
And, you know, that's how I would encourage everyone who's trying to figure out things like, how do I get enough sleep, to look at it. And now from a place of this like commitment, let's call it, to living a healthy lifestyle, then it's about, okay, how do I restructure my life? Very, very tangibly and tactfully and actionably, how do I start to actually just structure my life so that I can go ahead and hit the important things like getting my 8 hours of sleep, right? Does that mean I shouldn't be trying to do my work like as soon as I like, you know, right before I pop into bed? Well, the answer is no, because if we're looking at screens for at least 30 minutes or more before bed, 30 minutes or less, I should say, we are going to have a less restful sleep. And the same goes if I start eating a bunch of food before I hop into bed, or if I drink a lot of alcohol before I go to bed, I'm not going to sleep as well. So if we are people who actually prioritize high efficiency and being around for the long haul and doing great things professionally, we need to understand there are the nice to haves and the must haves. And there's certain things that, like, you know, you can try to slip by and squeeze by, but if you want to build yourself to be able to make it in a sustainable fashion, we've really got to protect the treasure that is the body.
Well, I completely agree. And I think it's unfortunate that in our Western culture, it's rewarded. And to your point, it's a badge of honor. Oh, I worked a 18-hour day or 2 18-hour days, or I pulled an all-nighter. You know, I love countries, you know, people may disagree with me about this, but like France, they have a policy, I think it is, that you can't make phone calls after 5 p.m., you know, that their time. It's done. You're done. You're out.
Wow.
After 5 p.m., it's a quality of life thing. They're off to enjoy baguettes and fromage from the local fromagerie and some good wine. And I think that, you know, whatever it is that you want to do, spend time with your family, go out for a nice meal, that definitely gives you the space. If you get into the office at 8 and leave by 5, that you're not on the phone, you're not doing work till all hours. And I think recent studies, you would probably know more about the medicine around this, but I know I've talked to a lot of speakers and authors and doctors throughout the years who say that we can actually achieve a lot more if we get that really sustainable rest. I'm a huge fan of transcendental meditation. I just did a refresher on it, and I've been doing it for 7 years. And when you do something like meditation, it allows you to get, it's the equivalent of 20 minutes of meditating is like 3 hours of deep sleep is what science tells us. And all of these things help us to do our work more efficiently and not to burn the candle at both ends and wear ourselves out and wear ourselves thin.
Funny you bring up meditation. Today I was having a pretty busy day and there was a lot to do. I'm giving a pretty large corporate seminar in a couple of days and there's a lot of prep going into it. And between that and filming an online course that I'm giving, it's like just a day where there was a lot to do and not a lot of time. And I could feel myself getting a bit away from center, my center, that is. Meaning, for anyone who's not familiar with terms like that, meaning I was not as calm and clear as I like to be. And what did I do? It's so funny you bring up meditation. Literally around 2 p.m., I would just, the self-awareness kicked in. And I was in a public place, but nonetheless, I put on a very calming ambient music on my headphones and I closed my eyes. Before I closed my eyes, I should say, I put my timer on my phone to 5 minutes. All I could really do at that point was 5 minutes, but I put it on for 5 minutes and I inhaled deeply into my belly and I exhaled deeply through the nose. So in through the nose and out through the nose, directing the air to the belly. And I opened up the first few minutes with just giving gratitude with every breath for a different thing in my life. And then I would start to say to myself, with an inhale, I am grounded. And on an exhale, I am grounded. And then I am complete. And exhale, I am complete. And I did this literally for 5 minutes. Felt like a completely different person. I felt like I'd left the yoga studio or something. It's amazing what these little tools like meditation, mindfulness, you know, and stuff like that can do. It's just incredible.
I completely agree. And one of my favorite little life hacks, depending on where in the world you live, I hear so many people, listeners and people I meet out in the world who say, well, Jennifer, I don't have the time. I have two kids or I'm in school and I'm trying to manage that and a full-time job. And I have all these responsibilities. Well, something I invite people to do at least once a week, if you can, make the time to Uber to work. I had a friend of mine who worked in New York who's like, Jen, you know, I really want to meditate and I'm stressed and working these long days. And I said, great. Do you take the train normally to the office? And he said, yeah. I said, what if you paid that $5 or $10, you know, and you get in an Uber and you can just sit there and you can use one of those apps such as Insight Timer or Headspace. There's so many great meditation apps out there. And just listen to a 5-minute meditation or just sit there and breathe in and out as you just described. And this person that I know, he said, Jen, I've started doing that and it's changed my life. And another thing that I think that's important, Julian, I would love your 2 cents on this, is the time that we think we don't have. Like, let's say that there is a time crunch and your report is due by 5 and it is 4:45 and you still have at least 10 minutes of work to do. If you don't take that 5 minutes to meditate and breathe, or even 2 minutes or 1 minute just to be in breath, and to allow yourself to be present, you're going to possibly screw up the report. You might not be as thoughtful about it. Or if you're stepping into a meeting, I can't tell you how many clients I've worked with over the years who are about to step into a meeting that could be a very important meeting, and they can already tell they're activated. And rather than postponing the meeting 5 minutes, they walk in there and they're frustrated and they're short of breath and they're reactive. And then they have to spend hours, if not days, undoing the mess they created because they didn't take that 5-minute pause or that 1-minute pause before the meeting or the report.
It is so true. I actually wrote sections on my book about this kind of thing. Literally, breathe before meetings. Don't send an email or text if you're rushing. I mean, for real, these are major things. So taking that, I really like how you worded it, Jennifer, that, you know, if you don't take that minute to calm down and cool out and deactivate yourself, you might spend 3-4 days after trying to put out the fires that you accidentally created. So true. When I started to, you know, sort of embrace that if I'm feeling worked up in any way, shape, or form, I will show up to the meeting a couple minutes later, but I'll show up as my much better self. things got a lot better. And at the same time, when I stopped trying to rush that text or that email, before, let's say, a meeting or before I'm about to jump into whatever commitment it might be, and instead say, you know what, if this person waits an extra hour or two, it's going to be a much more thought out email. And I won't have any of that worry, anxiety that I'm now wondering, oh, geez, did I say something I might regret? Did I not, you know, articulate myself the way that I should or the way that I would like to, et cetera, et cetera? All of that worry goes away. And you know, worry leads to anxiety most of the time. I mean, that's a huge reason why so many people have to, if they go out for drinks and they push it, they worry the next morning about something that they said, especially in a professional situation. So it's this idea of how can we live a life where we do less spontaneous things, therefore ensuring that we'll have less worry in our lives that will then basically translate into probably having less anxiety. And that's why, I mean, it's really a beautiful thing, I think, when we start to understand that anxiety is not a disconnected experience in our lives. It's actually completely connected. And that how I show up in the morning to my life will dictate how I leave my place. And that's going to then change and transform my experience when I get to work or when I get to my meeting, right? Or when I go for that tea or coffee in the morning. And what happens there and how the morning goes will then translate into my lunch, and lunch is going to, you know, that experience is going to move into something else. Everything is disconnected. You know, we go all the way up until bedtime, but it's how we wake up and it's how we go to bed and every single thing in between, that it's this chain reaction that if we're mindful and if we have the tools, we can actually make that chain reaction really empower us and serve us and lift us up. But unfortunately, when you see people who are like by 5 or 6 or 7 p.m., they look like they're like, you know, ready to call it for the next, not day, but for the next 2 months. It's because they're perhaps forgetting that everything is so connected. So that's why we have to catch ourselves early on in our days. I really believe one of the key ways to own our anxiety is to have positive rituals. And having those positive rituals, like a really good morning routine, for example, is so integral to getting the day set up right. And how that day goes is how everything else is going to flow.
I just got inspired by something, Julian. Do you mind if I share it? And I invite you to use it at your next corporate retreat, and I invite our listeners to use it. You ready?
Please.
You know how you just said positive rituals, right?
Yes.
What if we change that word into pause, P-A-U-S-E-ITY, positive rituals? Because think about it, if we went out in the world and we brought pause to every ritual, what level of awareness and mindfulness would that bring to our lives?
A lot. That's usually all that it actually takes, is to pause and then shine the microscope on what we're doing or how we're feeling. And then from a place of mindfulness, actually do something about that emotion, right? Or that feeling. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and something else too that I don't know if you're familiar with Bill Lau, really wonderful entrepreneur. He's become a friend of mine. And he came up with this interesting article. I think he wrote 8 words that will change your life. And it's an article on Medium where he said, you know, science, and this is based on neuroscience, has found that there are 4 main emotions that everything else comes from. And it's a combo of one of these 4 emotions, or a combo of multiple of them. And it's fear, happiness, sadness, and anger. And what I love that Bill suggested, and this is something anybody can do, is when you're feeling that anxiety, you ask yourself, what am I feeling? Am I feeling angry? Am I feeling afraid? Am I feeling happy? Am I feeling anxiety because I'm so happy and I'm worried I'm going to lose it? Or is it a mixture of happiness and fear? And the minute you say, I feel fear, I accept that I feel fear. It's instead of resisting whatever the emotion is, to your point earlier when you were talking about worry and worry leading to anxiety, it's because we're resisting the thing. We're resisting the meeting. We're afraid. And we don't even feel the emotions that we're feeling. And we try to cover them up with more work or alcohol or whatever it might be, which isn't bad. It's just human beings doing what human beings do. What if we pause, we ask ourselves, what am I feeling? And then we said either out loud or we said it sub-vocally, I accept I feel afraid. And in that moment, you have the capacity to choose something different.
Absolutely. When we take that time to actually let it register and lean into the emotion instead of running from it, that's when things can start to change. I really, really agree with what you just said. And it's this notion that anxiety is our teacher, right? It actually is. Most people run from it. We run from anxiety and we think that it's our enemy and that it's this thing that we quote unquote suffer from. But if we can lean into it and ask, you know, what is it that you're trying to tell me in this situation, anxiety? Oh, I'm afraid. Okay. I feel afraid. Mm-hmm. I am really excited.
I feel it. Yeah.
Yeah, I accept. And often I like to play with this idea of excited instead of anxiety, because 9 times out of 10, I have found, and people that I work with have found, that if they actually just change those two words, anxiety to excitement, the emotion is very similar, but the entire experience starts to change.
It's so beautiful. Oh, I love this, Julie, and this is brilliant. Well, were there any things that you and I didn't get a chance to talk about today, or any takeaways maybe from your book that you would love to leave our listeners with today?
Yeah, you know what? We've covered so much in such a short time. It's been a pleasure. The only thing I would really add in terms of what Own Your Anxiety is all about, it's that perhaps mainstream society has it kind of backwards, everyone. And maybe this notion of, I just need to cope with anxiety. I just need to beat it. I just need to survive with anxiety is not really the way that we should be looking at it. And instead to say, I have this anxiety. It is my greatest gift. It is my superpower. It is my secret edge. I just perhaps have a dysfunctional relationship with it. And I'm going to stop trying to just survive with it. And I'm going to start thriving with it. I'm going to use this natural energy to be my extra fuel. This is my fifth cup of coffee without the jitters, naturally. And then from a place of understanding what is it that you want in your life, use that anxiety and let it fuel you. The thing is, it all sounds great, but we need to have the tools. And that's why I wrote Own Your Anxiety. So I really do hope that anyone who's intrigued by this will just treat themselves to this very, very, very approachable thing, this medium that they can take into their lives. By reading this book, you'll be a part of a lot of people around the world that have really been able to reshape how they live with anxiety. And I get messages all the time on my Instagram. It's really incredible. People saying, you know, this book has changed my life. I have been running from my anxiety for far too long. Instead of leaning into it and exploring it and saying, you know, what are you trying to tell me? I believe it's our life detective. So when it starts to go and starts to buzz, just like a life detector, I should say, just like a smoke detector would inside our home, instead of just turning off the smoke detector, anxiety gives us a chance to ask ourselves, well, what is my life detector? Because anxiety is our life detector. What is my life detector trying to tell me? Turning it off is, you know, the drink, the pill, the whatever it might be. But leaning into it and saying, what are you trying to tell me? That's when we start to learn more about ourselves. And from a place of knowing and learning, that's when the loving really comes next. And self-love is so available. But let's love ourselves with strategy and with intention. And that only comes from being at a place of heightened self-awareness. So that's what this is all about. And it's really something I'm so passionate about. I want people to not feel that they are alone, that they're suffering the way that I once did. So thanks for having me here to share this message.
Well, it's so wonderful, Julian. And please remind everybody, if they want to go out and buy the book, Own Your Anxiety, please tell them where they can get the book.
Yeah, so I'm so grateful to say it's very readily available. You know, everywhere from your airport, probably you'll find it, or for sure you can grab it online. Amazon selling it, Barnes & Noble online, Indigo in Canada online, and tons of local retailers have the book as well. Yeah, and additionally, I send out a really inspiring email. It's called the Life Letter, and that is sent out. It's a very brief idea every single morning. So people can get that at julianbrass.com/subscribe. And on my Insta, it's very active and all about spreading the message of positivity and about learning tools to live a healthier, happier life and also to own our anxiety. And that's just my name at Julian Brass.
Perfect, Julian. Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. I know I definitely learned a lot from you today, and I'm intending that our listeners walked away with some little gems as well that we can all take out into our lives and apply. So it's been really wonderful to have you on here. And for anybody who wants to dive in, please do go pick up Julian's book, whether it's at an airport, on Amazon, wherever else you might find books. I do invite our listeners as well. If you are local to the Los Angeles area, I am going to be actually doing a workshop. It's going to be the first of its kind with one of the most famous, actually probably the most famous coach in the world on using your voice as an instrument for creating the life you love. And that's Arthur Joseph. So if you go to his website, Vocal Awareness, under upcoming events, you'll find a spot to register there. There's going to be limited space available on February 11th. So that'll be up by the end of this week. And we're going to do a special workshop in Los Angeles in Century City on February 11th from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. called The Art of Deeper Listening, where you will be able to look at it, understand your vision statement as well as your persona statement, and really dive into what is your life's purpose and how can you use your voice to listen deeper to what matters to you. So please do check that out. And I'm also pleased to say that the Deepak Chopra interview went well last week, and you can find it on Deepak Chopra's websites. I also host a show called Metaphysics on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. This week, Ian Gardner is going to be joining us on awaketvnetwork.com. And you can find the interview that Deepak Chopra and Don Hoffman and I did called basically Solving the Hard Problem of Consciousness. And you'll find that on Deepak Chopra's channel on YouTube, or you'll find it on his Instagram as well, or on the Awake TV Network website. So please do check out all of those. And if you want to tune in and check out any part of today's episode that you might have missed, you can go to latalkradio.com to the Get Yourself the Job page. And at the bottom of that page, you'll find an archive, including today's show, as well as any prior shows that we've done. And later this week, the show will also be available on iTunes. So you can put in Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. Please leave us any feedback, ratings. We really appreciate any interactions that you give us. And it's been such a pleasure to have you here with us, Julian. Thank you so much.
I've had a blast. You are amazing. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you. We'll have to have you on the Metaphysics show.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Wishing everybody a wonderful rest of your week. Thanks so much to our listeners.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.